Conference record has joined the conference.
Ben!
Hey.
Alright, cool, perfect. So where are you guys right now? Like, what state are you in?
Yeah, I'm in sitting in my house in, I guess it's my family's house, in Virginia, in the southeastern corner, in the middle of a bunch of country land, but we're about to head up north for some festivals this weekend. We play in Connecticut, New York, and Pennsylvania.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw that you guys are on a bunch of festival lineups that I was looking at, so it's awesome. Good work.
Thank you.
All right, so let me start with the questions. So I saw you guys at Walker Reef Fest.
Awesome. Great.
And it was amazing. So, like, how was that experience for you guys? Because of the whole van situation and all that.
It was kind of stressful and expensive, but the actual show part of it was really great and rewarding. Just to tell the story, we rolled up to Wakarusa, and when we got right into the entrance of the festival, our van started, like, hardly working, and we somehow, through a failing transmission, managed to get down to our stage. But due to the rain for the 2 days, it felt like you were driving into, like, a third world refugee camp. full of modern-day hippies, which was so crazy. We were like, where are we? And what have we gotten ourselves into? We ended up back at our stage. Van completely stopped working. We're like, oh, wow, we're stuck in this mud hole. We are stuck here. And so it's kind of a little bit of, you know, everyone was kind of demoralized and upset and wondering what was going to happen. My cousin was getting married that weekend, so we were like, how are we going to get back for this? And we were all involved in the wedding. And then we played, and there was pretty much nobody at the stage at first when we were setting up. And we're like, oh, no. And then right around the time we started playing, a lot of people showed up. And it ended up being an absolute blast. So I'm hoping that the Arkansas fan base really grows because of that show, just because it was such an expensive endeavor. But the show itself was absolutely great. And the family that kept us, that we stayed with in Arkansas was so understanding and hospitable and nice to us. So there were some great things about that trip and some things that really, frankly, stunk. But it was kind of mixed feelings. It was bittersweet.
Have you guys played in Arkansas before?
No, it was our first time in Arkansas, but it's a beautiful state. We were driving through, and it's just, I love it. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a little quick fact for you. Arkansas is the only state that is completely self-sustainable because we have, we can ore diamonds and stuff like that, so we have exports, and we also have imports. Availability, but we also have all of our own, like, natural water resources, and we have trees and mountains. We're protected from weather. Pretty interesting.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah. So how does the festival playing experience differ from the sort of bar area, smaller venue kind of playing experience? And have you guys played a lot of festivals?
We've played just a handful of festivals so far, enough to count on both hands, probably. Maybe, we played several. How do they differ from the bar and club scene? They're often probably 75% of the time it's an outdoor venue. There are some festivals that are indoor venues. I think the thing that differentiates a festival, though, is that there's tons of people at it that wouldn't just be coming to see you if you were playing, you know, at a bar in town. And because your name's on the roster, on the schedule, a lot of people that haven't even heard of you will just you know, show up to your show because they'll meet someone at the festival that is going to see you. And so I think it does really good things for, you know, for growth. And it's just a certain energy at a festival where everyone's, even despite the fact that they've been up all night and been watching music all day, they get there and they're just amped for the show. I played a festival in Boise, Idaho, called Tree Fort, and it was just crazy. It was like 350 people packed in this room just going crazy. And it's just, you know, the whole festival, the whole vibe is, just helps out with that. You know, people are just amped to listen to music and to be together. So it makes it really fun.
Awesome. So you guys are kind of a family operation, as I understand it. Like, there's what, like four or five of you are related? Is that correct?
My dad's in the band, and my sister's in the band, and my mom does all of our tour managing. So,
okay.
And my little sister often comes on tour. So the whole family is on tour pretty much. And then one of my best friends, Andrew, plays organ, and his brother, Jay, are in the band together. And then Amos, who is dating my sister pretty seriously, and Teresa, who is our violinist, who is Anna's best friend. So it's a pretty close-knit group of people.
So how did it all start? Did you guys start just sort of playing music together and you're like, whoa, we should start a band? Or were you like, we should start a band, and then you got together?
It happened over several months. I grew up playing music in my household with my dad and my sister, just goofing around and playing stuff, making up songs. I went to a school in England for a year, Bible school in the Lake District of England, just to find a foundation before I went out and did, you know, whatever I felt like I was supposed to do. I got home from that and said, Dad, I want to do music. I've been doing it just for fun. I want to see if we can do this seriously. So I naturally just grabbed the people around me, which were Andrew, my dad, and Anna, and we started working through the songs. And over the course of 4 months, we pulled in Amos, Teresa, and Jay, and then that was us. We've just been playing music since then, trying to make some sort of imprint.
So do you guys have any other musical projects that you work on outside of The Last Bison?
Not me, not particularly. I would love to. There's just not really time to focus on that. Amos and Teresa are violinists and cellists. They were previously involved with a lot of youth orchestras in our area, and you know, they can play weddings whenever they want because they're good and they can read. But other than that, no, really.
Okay. So, like, what did your parents do before they managed your band and played in it?
My parents?
Yeah.
My dad, he works two jobs, which he still tries to juggle, which is really difficult. But he works for a nonprofit summer camp out here in the eastern corner of Virginia, and is a pastor of worship and arts at the church we all grew up in. And my mom is a mother and wife to him. So he, you know, she was a mother. That's what she did. Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty big job.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They took us down to Bolivia in South America in the early 90s. So we spent about 5 years. They were doing missions work in the States. I mean, in South America, and then we moved back to the States around the turn of the century, and have been living here on this camp in Virginia ever since.
So have you, did you like learn anything about music when you were in Bolivia and stuff?
I think I spent most of my time down there just adventuring, running through the jungle, playing. It's a lot of playing. I was like four, and when we left, I was like nine and a half, so I think what I did take, though, was the the love for adventure, which is something I like to put in music, and I've been around the many places in the world, and I always make it a goal to hear some sort of music that is ethnic to that area. And when we were living in Bolivia, it wasn't even a goal, and it was just I was around it so much that I got to hear so much of the ethnic South American music. And I guess that impacted me in a subtle way that I've never really analyzed, but just in the way that, you know, there is music that is unique to regions, and I'm not sure what that is to Virginia per se. There's so much different music coming out of Virginia, but I think that loving ethnic music in that sense that is so rooted in the country, for me has been cool to say, you know, here is my state of Virginia. I don't really know what the quote-unquote ethnic music is because it's not so obvious here. I mean, there's obviously the mountain bluegrass scene, but in the area that I live, you know, it's all fields and farming. You know, what is, if there was, what would it be? And I guess I try to encapsulate some of what I feel Virginia sounds like in my songwriting.
Hmm. So have you noticed, like, since you've traveled so much and you've been either consciously or subconsciously, differences or particular...
You were breaking up and I didn't get the first part of the sentence, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, no worries. So since you've traveled so much and you've either consciously or subconsciously been, like, thinking about music and stuff like that, have you noticed particular differences or similarities in different countries and different cultures, the way that they use music and the way that it supports their life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's really cool. I've been to Asia, and a lot of the music over there is used in a lot of the ethnic and, you know, ancient folk music there is used in a religious and sacred aspect. So the songs have meaning. They have so many gods, and I think each song that they have, you know, they have different songs that attribute stuff to different gods, and you can see the characteristics of those gods in each song. I mean, I don't ascribe to that view. I'm a good old Virginia boy who ascribes to one god, but it's still fascinating, interesting to me that the characteristics of the gods they believe in come through in some of the tones of their songs, which can even be scary in some songs. I mean, I remember walking through this market in Thailand, and there was this big CD with a Vishnu on it, which I think is a Hindu god, and they were playing this CD, tracks of the CD, and it was just like this really ominous chanting, and I just remember being really scared walking into this market. Which brings me another, I'm kind of just ranting and thinking right now, another cool point that, you know, music can capture emotion and can emote different emotions. I don't even know if that made sense. Emote emotion.
I gotcha.
You know what I'm saying. So over in Asia, I think that's a cool aspect of it, is that it's very much, I mean, they obviously have other music, but the ethnic music that I remember when I think about it is that that religious music they have. And then you go to a place like Costa Rica, and, like, my experience with a place in Costa Rica is, you know, I ended up once, I was there a few months ago, and, you know, in this salsa bar, and all these locals are just dancing. And for there, it's like, it's festive, it's joyous, it's happy, it's less contemplative and more joyous. And so each place you go to, I think that the culture is hugely connected with the way they view music. Absolutely.
Awesome. So what's your songwriting process like for The Last Bison? What do you take from all of those places that you've been in?
I definitely want to, I'm fishing for a word, instill joy into people who listen to songs I write, whether it be a serious song or a happy, upbeat song. There's something about it that's hopeful and joyous, in the arrangement or the lyric. Definitely with some of the more religious aspect of songwriting, be it, you know, the fact that a lot of Asian songs are based in their religions, or, you know, just like American hymns, you know, which that there's a religious aspect in my songs too that evokes some thought to the listener. You know, not in a preachy way, just in a what does that mean? What is he saying? I find I often write really cryptically, whether I want to or not. Sometimes people don't really understand what the heck I'm talking about. Those are definitely some of the themes that I try and put out, that they feel joy, and then they the listener, whoever that may be, is feeling joy and also, you know, thinking and analyzing the song with me, kind of. So,
who's a songwriter that you really admire, like their work really affects you?
Oh gosh. This probably sounds like a cop out answer, but it's completely true. I've been listening to U2 ever since I was a kid. And, you know, most folk songers, folk musicians would be like, you know, Bob Dylan, Cat Stevens, all those guys. But for me, it was something that's completely not even in the folk realm, and it's Bono and his ability to continue to write songs that affect people, and the durability of his songwriting, and how I feel like each of his songs really does the arrangements that, you know, the Edge and the band put together justice. I feel like the best songs, the emotion of the song can be felt in the lyric, or also if you strip the lyric apart, also the music evokes the same emotion, unless, of course, the one exception is if you're trying to put irony in a song, then that mindset can just confuse the heck out of people. But other than that, for me, the songs that strike a chord with me the most are the ones that, the, you know, if the lyric is gentle, then the song kind of dies down, or if it's heavy, the song builds up. And that can't always be the case, but there's certain moments in a song where you need to make that happen, I think, and that kind of strikes a chord with anyone, whether they know what's happening there or not.
Yeah, there's so many subtleties in music that you don't even realize are happening until after the fact. That's really
right,
beautiful.
Cool.
So is there like a, what's the connection between poetry and songwriting for you, or music in general?
Yeah. I've never really considered myself a poet, but I guess that any songwriter is technically. So I think coming from a writer's perspective, musically and lyrically, the connection between the two is kind of what I just touched on, is that it depends on what you write first. I don't have a method for myself. If I come with a lyric first, I write the music around it. If I come up with the music first, I write the lyric around it. But if I come up with the music first, I have to play it over and over and over again to see, you know, how does this affect me? And what does this make me feel like nostalgically, lyrically, emotionally? And then I try and come up with a story that I either make up or something that I've experienced that I feel like fits to the tone of that song. And when it's the lyrics, I try and come up with with voicings of chords and chord progressions, or just you know, music that portrays the lyrics in the way I want them to be, that might shed light on certain lyrics that might be confusing, or, you know, the opposite, you know, kind of shroud some of them with mystery. It really depends on the song. But I think that they work really well together in the sense that, because music can capture the same emotion, I think, as a lyric can, if you put that behind a lyric that's saying the same thing, it becomes all the more powerful.
Yeah, that's a really good way to explain it. So what is your recording process like then?
Yeah, the recording process is, I'm going to tell you a little secret. We're not very good at playing to a click track, which is the classic way of recording. So we've done everything predominantly live and then tracked stuff over the bass live recording. So it gets a kind of a live feel, which we like anyways. I don't think that's good or bad. I think it could go either way. So it's usually more fast-paced than most people, in the sense that because a lot of it's live, we're just trying to move from song to song. The producer we worked with last time, though, Kevin Ogunis, it was our first time working with the producer. So it's kind of, you know, you butt heads sometimes because you have different ideas for, and you feel like he's trying to mess up your song, and he feels like he's trying to help the song out. And then there's this, like, certain, like, creative tension that ends up resolving into something better. But that's hard to get used to. That's hard to learn how to cope with. And the 3.5 weeks we had recording, I don't think for everyone in the band, that was enough time for them to understand that. I got it after about 4 days. I was like, oh, okay, this is healthy, even though it's hard. Mm-hmm. So working with the producer is, you know, it can be stressful and hard, and especially if you don't know each other or understand each other yet, and you have to learn each other. That can be difficult, but in the end, it's a good thing. Doesn't mean I wouldn't love to self-produce, because that would be awesome too. That's a completely different animal. Our first album was self-produced, the one that we did independently, and that, you know, it's a much easier project because you can be more selfish, I guess, you don't have to cater or compromise with someone else's opinion on the song.
It can be just your vision.
Exactly, which I think both have their benefits. Both definitely have their benefits. One is just easier, but easier is not always best. So, but like I said, I think it could be good or bad, either way.
So tell me something you've been told, like advice, a quote, or something like that that's stuck with you over time that you like carry with you.
Oh yes, I actually. Okay. I have one written down that I don't really, I'm really bad at memorizing stuff unless really put my mind to it. But, I have it written on my phone just so in times like this, I can remember exactly what it is. I'm going to find it real quick. Just give me it'll probably take a minute.
No worries.
I really want to find this one though, because
I'm pretty excited.
Where are you flipping through my little book? Come on. It's a George Washington quote.
Oh, that guy is awesome.
Because I love that man. You know, sometimes I wonder if he was, like, placed into America today, how disgusted he would be.
Oh, yeah. I wonder about that a lot, like, how people from history would. I was thinking about Galileo and like what he would think about like lasers and stuff like that. And,
yeah. Well, he would probably think as he's. I'm thinking of like people like our founding fathers and finding out that our phone calls are monitors. They'd be pissed. They'd be like, "What are you guys doing?"
They're like, "I want to have a private conversation for God's sake."
Yeah, I know. Come on. Where is this quote? This is driving me nuts. Oh, my
George
gosh.
George Washington, where are you?
I know. I might just have to
find it.
So
how do you feel about the NSA stuff, about whistleblowing and all that?
I don't really know. I haven't really looked into it. I listened to a talk show about it in the car the other day. Do I think it's right? No, not necessarily at all. Does it surprise me that our government's doing that? No, not at all. So I don't think that we should necessarily be shocked because, I mean, if you didn't think the government was monitoring stuff, then I don't know what.
You're not awake.
To tell you. Yeah, I mean, like, come on, it's the 21st century and our government has access to so much stuff. I mean, that they monitor our phone calls isn't a big surprise to me. Do I think it's wrong? Absolutely. So I mean, we'll see what happens. So I found the quote. I'll say it slowly. Yep. George Washington. This is something that I need, and now I'm going to memorize it so I can just tell people, because every time someone asks me for a quote, this is what I think of, and I never remember. That's why I wanted to tell it to you for sure and find it. It's I'll say it slowly. I hope I shall always possess firmness and virtue enough to maintain what I consider the most inviolable of all titles, the character of an honest man.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so just basically a charge to be upright as a man and virtuous. So, but he just says it so well, and I respect him as a historical figure, as a president, as a man. So he has some journals that you can buy that are just amazing, the stuff that he wrote in them. So,
I didn't even
know. I just had to flip through this book and find it, but I just started reading this book again, and I have the quote written down, like, in my notes in my phone and in some of my journals. Every time I read it, I write it down somewhere, but I just thought this would be quickest. It wasn't too bad, right? Like, 3 minutes I found it?
No. Oh, no, that was fine. I'm not in a very hurry. I'm just at work anyway, so
Did you get the quote? I could find it.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm actually recording this, so I'll just... I understood it, and I'll be able to... And if I didn't, I'm sure I can look it up, because George Washington is fairly famous.
Yeah, that's true. And it's just the one about him talking about being a virtuous man. You know, it was like at the end of this book. It was like at the last page.
What is the book called?
It's called The Right to Lead, A Study in Character and Courage. It's just different stories of men throughout history that were either, you know, found themselves in a position where they had to take leadership or, you know, earned the right to lead, and then how a person in a leadership position can most effectively and virtuously lead people. And it kind of gets to the point that, you know, the best leaders are also servants. You know, they serve the people under them that are working with them. And so, which is hugely true of George Washington. So
cool. So what's your goal as a musician? What do you want to, like, give to this world with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess if it got to the end of whatever career is to come in music, I would hope that as a musician and as a band, we left our family of listeners with a sense of joy to go out and live every day as best as they can, as, you know, as virtuously and as best as you can, you know, to pursue what is good and then try and live that out. If our music could somehow do that, I'd be happy. And I think that music does have the power to do something like that. And I hope that our music could translate in that way. I guess at the end of the day, if you asked me what I wanted at the end of a music career, what I wanted my music to do, I would say that it would leave people feeling different than they felt before they heard it in a positive way, you know, in a way that, I know I say this a lot, but brings them joy and makes them think about things in a way that maybe they didn't before. I feel like, I know I'm guilty of this. People don't often just, you know, sit down and think. And where the mind can go when you just sit down and be quiet and think is pretty amazing. It's just we never take the time to do that.
Yeah. That's true. I've been, like, as a personal goal lately, I've been trying to sort of direct my thoughts to a place that's, like, more beneficial to me than just sort of odd wonderings about, like, oh.
Yeah. And it's so hard to do because, you know, your thoughts just kind of stray so easily. And so it's hard to just kind of sit down and rein them in.
Yeah.
I guess you don't even necessarily need to rein them in, but just to, like, you know, just to think as opposed to wander.
Right, yeah. Something more, maybe more organized or definitive.
Exactly.
Awesome. I'm glad that you are a thinking being, because I think that there are, like, a lot of people who, you know, like, with food safety and like, eating better food and stuff, so many people are like, oh, I just don't tell me what's in my hot dogs, because I don't want to know. And that's, like, I think that's a big problem, is, like, the complacency.
Yeah.
I'm
the kind of person who knows what's in my hot dog, but I eat it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of person who's kind of thought beyond that point and thought, oh gosh, the difference between me dying young is like 5 years. Heck, I'm gonna eat hot dogs.
I know, isn't that the problem? Some of the most delicious foods are just the ones that are gonna give you cancer.
It's awful. It's like,
yeah, thanks,
I just want to eat that. It's so good. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
It's awful. I know. And like the foods that are the most healthy are the most expensive because people have to farm them, and there's so much stuff that goes into it. So it's like, I want to eat healthy,
but
this
doing
chicken
your own
sandwich
gardening.
Is, oh, it's rewarding. I know. We used to do it a lot at home before the whole band thing happened, but, you know, it's like, possible now because,
oh my gosh, it would be so cool if you guys could have something in like a van window.
Ooh, or if like the whole top of our van had a rack on it that was like a greenhouse.
Yeah, that would be awesome. You guys should do
that. Yeah, I'll think about it.
So what big events do you guys have coming up? Where can grateful web readers find you over the next few months?
Did you say what events?
Where are you going to be playing?
Yeah, just some key places. We'll be at a small festival this weekend on the Hudson River called Stills in the Hills. No, never mind. That's in somewhere in Pennsylvania called Stills in the Hills. And also the day before that at a festival called Clearwater. The festival Clearwater is actually put on by Pete Seeger. And he's 93 years old, and he's playing a set this year at Clearwater.
Wow.
Which is ridiculous. And then the weekend after that, huge news is we're playing Firefly Festival in Delaware. And then at the end of July, we have a 3-weekend festival. This is all on our website. We're playing Newport Folk Festival one day, then headed down to Exponential Fest in Philadelphia, then the next day we're down to Floyd Fest in Virginia. So it's
cool.
That's the big stuff we have going on this summer.
All right. So anything you'd like to say to Grateful Web readers?
I wish I had some sweet quote like George Washington's.
Two quotes.
Yeah. I know, you're right. I do. I'm going to go look at my quote book and just have answers for. See, people like, there's people who ask like conventional questions, and then people like you who are just awesome who ask really great questions that actually make people like me have to think about the answers instead
well,
of.
Well, God, I'd rather have that.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
Good.
Which is why it's so refreshing. You know, this one's just kind of funnier and fun, but our motto, kind of between my group of friends and the band, is every day is the best day ever. Which sometimes is hard to think because, you know, some days really just suck. But I think the idea of rejoicing is kind of foreign to a lot of people because it's different than happiness or joy. Rejoicing is is being content despite circumstance. And so just to try and do that, to try and rejoice despite your circumstances, know that there is good and there's truth and that everything's going to be all right. So,
awesome.
To a certain extent, yeah. So every day is the best day ever, and that
that's
basically
true.
Means
I like
that basically just us means, you know, rejoice despite circumstance.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope to see you guys play in Fayetteville, Arkansas sometime because that's where I live.
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome.
So
how far are you,
guys,
from Little Rock?
About 3 hours.
Oh, gosh, that's far. Okay.
Yeah, it's not a fun drive. But if you guys ever need any, if you're ever going to be in this area, you should let me know. I can set up, like, maybe help you find a venue or set up a house show or something like that.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
Sweet. Well, thank you very much for talking to me. And
you
can find... I wrote a small review about you guys in the Waka thingy.
Oh, cool.
In my Waka preview on Grateful Web, so if you guys ever want to look at that, you should.
On Grateful what?
GratefulWeb.com.
GratefulWeb.com. Awesome. I'll look it up.
All right. Well, thank you very much. It was really nice talking to you, Ben.
Thank you. You too. Have a good day.